just tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levionier. In this hour, horror programs. We hear The Haunting Hour later on with the story The Lonesome Corpse, but right now it's Arch Obler's Lights Out series, a CBS broadcast from February 16th, 1943, called Oxychloride X.
Lights out, everybody. Later than you think. This is Arch Obler. Someone has said that the two mainsprings which drive the world are hunger and the will to power. I think we'll all agree about the hunger, but as to the will to power, well, sometimes I think it's not quite as strenuous as that. There are some people in this world who don't want to run anything. They just want to be liked. And that's the mainspring of our story tonight, Oxychloride X.
So I says to him, I says, well, sir, I'd like to be obliging, but I really haven't got the time. And he says to me, he says, well, Mr. Jackson, after all, we're making this proposition only to a few outstanding student representatives on the campus. And we do feel that you should be interested in our proposition.
Well, what did you say?
Well, I said, mister, I can't be bothered. Just can't be bothered. And I gets in my car and off I goes.
But, Bob, free clothes just for wearing them around the campus.
Listen, Stan, my boy, what I want to be a clothes horse for any old haberdashery? My old pappy's got more money than he knows what to do with. Now, what for, I ask?
Well, I guess you got something there. Say, who are you going to take to the dance Saturday night?
Haven't made up my mind.
How about that new number over at the Roto House?
No, thank you, brother.
What's the matter?
Well, did you ever take a look at her feet?
No, sir. Never got below her chin.
Hold it. Yeah?
Ray Stewart to see you, Stan.
Oh, yeah. Send him on up.
Ray Stewart. Who's he?
Well, we're still short one pledge, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, I know, but Ray Stewart, who is he?
Oh, I met him over in chemistry. Got a mind like a textbook.
Oh, but who is he? We can't pledge a man just because he's a grind.
Well, we could use a few grinds around here. Exams come around, there's nothing like a few of those brainy boys to pull us through.
But who is he? Where's he from? Who's his family? Who's his father?
Hold it. Come on in, Ray.
Oh, thank you.
Well, it was good of you to bother to come over tonight.
It was good of you to ask me.
No, not at all. Ray, I want you to meet the president of our house, Bob Jackson. Mr. Jackson, Mr. Stewart.
I'm certainly glad to make your acquaintance. I might as well admit this is the first time I've ever been in a fraternity house.
Really?
Sit down, Ray. Make yourself at home.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Now, tell me, Ray, do you ever go in for any sports back in your prep days?
Oh, no. I never had much time for that sort of thing.
No?
No, I think that sports should be put into their proper place. After all, I'm sure you agree they aren't particularly important.
No? And what, might I ask, is important in your estimation, Mr. Stewart?
Doing things. Being someone.
What?
Doing things man's never done before. Taking the elements and transmuting them into things which never existed until you thought of them. That's important. That's like being almost godlike, isn't it?
Mister, how you talk.
Sorry, I get sort of carried away.
Yeah. Well, that's all right. Bob, this boy sure knows his chemistry.
Huh?
Oh, I really don't know so much.
Say, I ought to know better. You pulled me over some tough spots in this course.
I'm very glad to help you whenever I can. If I lived here, I could help you all the time. I could help you too, Mr. Jackson.
If I need help, I know where to get it.
Oh, I didn't mean to offend you.
It's all right, Stuart. Tell me, you're from around Chicago way, aren't you?
Oh, no, Milwaukee. Lived there for years.
Nah, don't tell me I'm one of those Bruin families.
Oh, no. We're not wealthy people at all. My father runs a small business. It isn't much, but we get along.
Oh.
I don't think money's important anyway if a person's ambitious. Do you, Mr. Jackson?
Oh, no. What's money?
You fellas may think this funny, but well, I always thought it's more important what a fella does than what he has. I mean, well, I've always had the feeling that someday, somehow, I'm going to do something really important. Maybe even miraculous.
Well, now, what do you expect to do? Discover the missing link?
Yes, Stuart. What is this miracle you expect to perform?
Well, I don't know exactly. Ever since I've been just a kid, I've been interested in chemistry, and I've had a feeling that someday I'd, well, perform an experiment, mix certain chemicals together, and something would happen that never happened before.
Now, you hear that, Stan? A miracle man.
Amazing, my dear Bob. Simply amazing.
I know it sounds silly, but things I dream about always seem to work out.
Well, would you mind telling us the last miracle that worked out?
Well, this.
This? Well, what do you mean?
Well, as long as I can remember, I've always wanted to belong to a fraternity, and here I am. I mean, you invited
me. Well, just a minute there, fellow. Mr. Stewart, it's been awfully nice of you to come over and visit with us, and someday we'll have you back again. But now we've got some studying to do, so if you don't mind...
Oh, no, no, not at all. It was nice of you to invite me over. Well, good night, fellas.
Good night.
Good night.
Hold this girl, he crackpot.
Yeah. Did you see the look in his eye when he was talking about miracles?
Yeah. Well, it'll be a miracle if he ever gets back into this house again, I'll tell you that. What in the world ever made you ask him over here?
Well, I didn't know. How was I to know he's a crackpot?
Pledge him to our fraternity. Pledge him to the booby hatch.
If you please, Mr. Stewart.
Oh, yes, Professor?
Mr. Stewart, might I ask if you're anxious to sever your relationship with this university?
No, sir.
Then might I ask why in creation you persist in ignoring my warnings? In this laboratory, you're to perform the experiments given you to perform. Understand? Given you to perform.
Yes, sir.
Then might I ask why you persist in your, shall I call it, original experiments? Perhaps it's your intention to blow up the university. Or just the laboratory.
I'm sorry.
You'll be more than sorry if I find you doing this sort of thing again. Now, take down this apparatus and continue with the work in your textbook.
Yes, sir.
This is my last warning, so bear it in mind.
Oh, hello, Stuart. How about loaning me your notebook for a few hours?
Oh, hello, Jackson. You haven't been to lab much, have you?
No, I haven't, but I can make it up. We've been pretty busy over at the house. Initiations and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. Jackson.
Yeah?
You, never invited me back. I thought maybe you forgot.
Oh, well, you know how those things are.
I wrote my mother that I was joining your fraternity.
Well, that was a sap thing to do.
Was it?
Well, we hadn't pledged you. Stan simply invited you over so I could talk to you.
But you said you wanted me to come back.
Oh, now, look here, fella. Don't be stupid about this. We didn't pledge you, so that's that.
And you're not going to pledge me?
Certainly not.
But why?
I don't have to tell you why.
But you've got to tell me.
Oh, quit pawing me, will you? All right, you're asking for it, so here it is. We didn't pledge you because we think you're a crackpot.
A what?
A crackpot. You talk about miracles. You spend every minute of your time here in the lab monkeying around with things you don't know anything about, getting yourself in all kinds of trouble. Yeah, and you look like a first-class screwball.
But I'm just trying to make...
I don't care whatever it is you're trying. It isn't normal. I'll bet you never had a glass of beer in your life. And if a girl ever looked at you, you'd fall over in a faint.
Then you're not going to pledge me? We're
not gonna pledge you. So if your mama expects you to be in a fraternity, you better start cooking up one of those miracles, fella. A first-class miracle.
Sleep. It's so late. Sleep. I've got to sleep.
Not gonna pledge you.
That's what he said. Not gonna pledge me. Why do I keep thinking about it? If I could only sleep...
We think you're a crackpot.
Oh, I gotta stop thinking about these things. It's not healthy to think what I'm thinking.
Crackpot. Not gonna pledge.
Crackpot. What's the matter with my head?
Crackpot.
I heard him talking in it over and over and over again.
Crackpot.
I'm not crazy. I'm not. I'm as good as you are. I'm as good as both of you put together. Stop saying that. Stop saying it.
Crackpot.
I'll show you. I'll show you both. I'm better than you are. I'm better than anybody. I'll show you. Julia, talk about miracles. I'll give you miracles. The lab. I've got to get into it. I'll give you miracles. It's dark in there. I've got to get in. Oh, blasted door. Got to get in. Window. I'll show you. It's so dark in here. Got to find a lab table. Got to make a miracle.
Who's there? Who's there, I say?
Watchman.
Come on now, who's there? Talk up.
You don't have to get so excited. I'm a student.
Student, eh? That's
Let's have a look at you.
That flashlight, you're blinding me.
I've got to see who you are, don't I? Yeah, I know you. Seen you on the campus.
I told you I'm a student.
Well, that don't give you no right to be here after hours. How'd you get in here? Oh, broke a window now, did you? Huh?
I didn't break the window.
But I heard the glass.
So did I, and I followed the man in here.
Man, what are you talking about?
Give me your flashlight, and I'll show you.
All right. Here.
Now, look behind you.
Well,
no one will stop me. No one. Miracle. I've got to make one. Got to. Got to. Got to. Barium. 5cc selenium oxychloride. Oh, good, good. You're working out just as I planned.
Who's there? Who's that working there?
Professor.
Oh, it's you, Stuart. And after all my warnings.
You're just in time, Professor.
Yes, just in time to have you thrown out of the university. What are you doing there? What is this mess of equipment?
It's my miracle.
Miracle? What are you talking about?
My miracle.
Are you insane? Take it apart, all of it, at once.
Listen to it bubbling. A beautiful sound, isn't it, Professor?
Take it apart, I tell you. Empty out the retort.
No. No, I've got to wait.
Are you mad? Turn out the burners. No, all right, I'll turn them off for you.
No, stay where you are.
Stuart, put down that acid.
I'll smash the bottle on your head if you touch anything on that table.
No, don't throw it. Put the bottle of acid down, Stuart. Please.
My experiment. My miracle. Bubbling and boiling and stewing. It will work, Professor. It's got to work.
But what is it?
I told them I'd create something that no other man has. I told them. And I will, Professor. You hear me? I will.
But what?
A solvent. A solvent more powerful than anything the world has ever known.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Listen to it, Bubble.
You said solvent. Explain yourself.
Yes, solvent. A solvent that will dissolve steel like a hot flame.
What do you say?
You heard me say it. A solvent that will dissolve steel faster than a razor cutting through paper. Do you know what that means? Run a line of this liquid across a steel girder, and the girder will crumple like a falling tree. Pour some of my solvent into a glass shell and bomb the cities. Tell you, it'll make war too horrible for men to endure.
You crazy boy, you. You know what you're talking about?
I'm talking about that. That liquid there. Listen to it. Listen to it sing.
Why, no such solvent exists. Selenium oxychloride, perhaps, but to do the impossible things you talked about would require a quantity so...
The beaker. It cracked.
Well, do something. That liquid's flying all over my bench, my laboratory.
The stone of the bench. It's eating through the stone.
Well, stop it.
The liquid. It's eating through the stone bench.
No. No, it can't be.
It's eating through the slate of the floor. The hole's getting bigger and bigger.
Run. Run.
Oh, I've done it. I've created something no other man has done. A solvent that dissolves anything. Anything. Anything.
Hey, what happened? What's the matter?
The lamp. I guess it's on fire.
Well, where's the fire? I can't see anything.
Oh, school's out here. Hey, fellas, what's up?
Well, nobody seems to know. Something's going wrong in the lab. Firemen won't let us in.
Something burning?
I don't know. Can't get near enough to find out.
I can't see any fire.
There's plenty of smoke, though.
Plenty of excitement. Read about it in tomorrow's paper, I'll bet you. Hey, listen to that sound.
Yeah, sounds like water.
Gosh, what is it?
Hey, everybody back. Back.
The building. It's going to smash.
Run. Hey, run.
I did it. I did it. A solvent that dissolves anything. Anything.
Hey, Chief, look at this.
Huh? What's the matter, Murph? Somebody have sex doublets?
Get a load of this, Chief. Came in over the news wires. Read it.
Additional on Whitmore University. Mysterious cavity on campus growing larger hourly. More followers. Mysterious cavity. Hey, what is this, a dentist advertisement?
Oh, don't you remember, Chief? A couple hours ago, that flash about something eating a hole so big a building fell in it. This is the follow-up. The thing's getting bigger. What do you want to do about it?
Forget it.
What?
Don't you see through a gag when it hits you in the face? Somebody's just having fun on the wires. Ha! Mysterious cavity growing bigger. Well, when it's as big as a hole in your head, that'll be news, Murph. That'll be news.
Anything. It dissolves anything. And I did it. I discovered.
Yes, 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 yes. Hello. What is it? Yes, yes, this is Dr. Whitmore. Who is this? Who? National News Service. Now, look here, my good man. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm supposed to be resting. My vacation, you know. What? My university. Building collapsed. But are you sure? Yes, yes, I'll call them long distance at once. No, I can't give you any sort of statement now. Hang up, man. I've got to get the operator. Operator. Give me long distance. Give me... What? Long distance is calling? Well, put them on. Hello. Yes, this is he. Rogers? Yes, Rogers. What? Did? That's impossible. Larger? But how could it grow larger? Chemicals? Are you drunk, man? Insane? It's impossible.
But you must do something. Something.
Listen, mister. I'm a fireman, not a magician.
But that hole, it's 20 feet wider than it was 10 minutes ago.
Mister, I don't know what it's all about. No fire and the ground's burning right away.
We have $5 million worth of property on this ground. If that hole's
burning. For Pete's sake, leave me alone, will you? We've been throwing water on the edges of the thing ever since the building fell in, but it don't do no good. It don't do no good.
Gentlemen, listen to this out of tonight's paper. The latest news on the Whitmore University mystery. What at first was treated lightly by all newspapers as either a hoax or a shifting of earth stratum has now developed into an authentic yet unbelievable situation. The hole, which began at the site of the chemical laboratory building, is now 300 feet in diameter and spreading with unbelievable rapidity. Fire departments and fire experts from all neighboring communities within a radius of 100 miles have been called in, but have been helpless to combat the rapidly spreading pit. Many conflicting theories have been propounded as to the cause of the cave-in, but at last reports nothing definite had been determined.
That's enough, Professor Parker. What about the solvent?
Yes.
What about unbelievable, unexplainable as it is. It is apparently self-regenerating and oxidizing anything it comes in contact with so quickly that we see no fire but only the rapidly growing cavity where the earth is being consumed.
But, Professor Parker, what is this solvent? Surely you don't expect us to believe that this student you were telling us about...
I mean exactly that.
Oh, preposterous. It's a fault in the structure of the earth. There is no such thing as a self-regenerating solvent. Simple cave-in, that's all it is.
That's what I've been talking all this time.
Gentlemen, if you please. What I know, I know.
Oh, it's preposterous.
Gentlemen, if you please. If my professional reputation is not enough to substantiate what I've said, then at least you'll listen to the boy himself. He's here. Listen to him.
Well, why should we?
Yes, gentlemen, if you'll listen, I'll tell you. You'd better listen to me.
Gentlemen, please.
What Professor Parker said is true. It is a solvent. It dissolves anything it touches quickly, furiously. The byproducts of that dissolution give it new strength and movement. And I discovered it, gentlemen. I
know, but what will happen? What can we do?
We can wait.
Wait? How can we wait? Look out there. The hole's within 2 feet of another building already. You've got to stop it at once. If you don't...
The building!
The foundation's under mine! It's crashing!
Mother in heaven. Harris Hall, caved right in the hole.
Professor Parker, you boy, listen. Which chemicals did you use? We've got to fight it with chemicals. Spread them around the edge. Neutralize the solvent.
Yes, that's it. Chemicals. We'll neutralize the reaction.
No, gentlemen. Listen. You may neutralize the reaction at the edges of the hole, but you forget one thing.
What? What are you talking about?
The solvent is eating downward at many times the rate it's eating outward. You may neutralize the reaction at the edges of the hole, but have you forgotten? It's eaten the hole a quarter of a mile deep already, and it's eating into the earth faster and faster. How are you going to stop that?
Faster, faster and faster at an ever-increasing rate, this strange cancer on the surface is eating away. It is now approximately 14 hours since the phenomenon began. And already it has eaten outward a distance approximately 1 mile in diameter with a resulting damage of over $1.5 million in property.
Truly, the most astounding factor in this catastrophe is the fact that the hole is increasing in depth at an unbelievable rate. At our last reports, approximately 10 minutes ago, the pit had reached a depth of approximately 3 miles. And experts apparently refuse to predict how much further this earth cancer will go. What only a handful of hours ago was a quiet section of the country in which stood the Whitmore University is now a great gaping pit in the surface of the earth out of which rise strange, noxious gases as that burning something eats deeper and deeper and deeper into the bowels of the earth. The latest sonic recordings indicate that the shaft has now reached a depth of 11 miles, 2,342 feet. I'm right on the scene and will continue to send reports as quickly as I can.
Sure is a crowd here.
Yeah, 500,000 they say.
Yeah, watching it and waiting. And for what?
Ain't it ever going to stop, Stan?
Don't ask me. I don't know. It's going deeper and deeper every minute. There ain't no stopping it.
Listen to them. Scared, ain't they? Every one of them.
Well, aren't you?
Yeah, sure. That hole going deeper and deeper into the ground and nobody can stop it. And what happens when it gets all the way through, nobody knows. Sure, I'm scared.
Scared plenty.
Earthquake. Help. Send help. Volcano erupting. City on fire. Martial law declared. Tidal waves sweeping inland. Nothing can stop it. Nothing. Nothing. Earthquake.
Fire.
Tidal waves.
World coming to an end.
Judgment of God. Judgment of God.
From Siberia to Cape Town to San Francisco and around the world again. I tell you, the earth's ripping apart. And I tell you, it's that hole in the ground that's done it. It's affected the rotation of the earth. Unbalanced things.
Yes, and it's biting deeper every minute. What'll happen when it eats through to the other side? The ocean pouring through. We'll die. We'll all die.
Who's to blame? Who's to blame? Who's to blame?
It's that kid who's to blame.
Yeah, we read it in the papers. That crazy college kid.
There he is.
That's him. That's him.
Grab him. Here's the blame.
No, let me go, you fools, you. I've done a great thing, a wonderful thing. Created something no one ever thought of. No, let me down. Let me down. Let me down, you fools. I started the song, but I didn't know this would happen. You can't blame me for a miracle.
Throw him in the hole.
No.
Yes, throw him
no.
in the hole. He made it.
No, don't throw me down in here. There's no bottom to it. No, no.
Here. Here, put him down here on the grass.
Dan?
Yes. Boy, oh boy, will this be a sensation on the campus.
But, Watchman, how did it happen?
Well, me, I'm making my rounds of the grounds as usual, and all at once in the moonlight, I see this fellow walking across the grass. So I go up to him, and I see the fellow's walking in his sleep.
In his sleep?
Yeah. Just when I starts to grab him, easy-like, he pulls loose, yells something about, "Don't throw me in, don't throw me in." And then he runs across the campus and dives headfirst down into the swimming pool. And it's empty. When I pull him out, he's like he is now. Busted neck.
Well, oh,
but who is he? Anyone recognize him?
Yeah. Yeah, I know him. Stewart's his name. Ray Stewart. Kind of a screwy little crackpot. Always talking about creating miracles with chemicals. I wonder what he thought was happening to him diving down that hole.
Columbia Broadcasting System.
Lights Out, on Tuned to Yesterday, a broadcast from February 16, 1943, on CBS. Among the actors was one Jack Edwards, who was very familiar to Adventures by Morse radio listeners, as he regularly played the part of Skip Turner, the partner or sidekick to Captain Friday, during the serialized story, sounding much like another Carlton E. Morse character of Doc Long from the I Love a Mystery series. Jack Edwards played the president of the fraternity in that broadcast, Bob Jackson. You're listening to An Hour of Horror on Tuned to Yesterday with your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for a broadcast of The Haunting Hour with the story, The Case of the Lonesome Corpse. This episode directed by Edwin Wolfe and broadcast on NBC in 1945.
No,
wherever you are, do not break the stillness of this moment. For this is a time of mystery, a time when imagination is free and moves forward swiftly, silently. This is the haunting hour.
Hugo Carteret? Why, of course you do. The brilliant criminologist and charming gentleman who had such a wonderful flair for solving crimes, which carried a hint of the macabre and savored of the supernatural. He died back in the 20s, and they say that everybody from the 400 of Park Avenue to the 400,000 of the Bowery and Hell's Kitchen came to his funeral. Anyway, Hugo Carteret left his memoirs. And the very first chapter deals with an infamous crime, which in June of the year 1922 threw all of New York City into an uproar of horror. Such was the case of the Lonesome Corpse. Greystone Park used to be the private estate of old Caleb Greystone, eccentric recluse and, incidentally, millionaire many times over. When Caleb died, he willed the estate to the city of New York. The city fathers, properly grateful, promptly converted the estate into a park. It was public in that it was open to the public, but it had a private look because a 15-foot wall of polished stone completely surrounded it. One day, back in June of 22, a big car drove up to the only entrance. In the back seat of the limousine was William Marsden, wealthy lawyer and executor of the Greystone estate, and he had come to inspect the grounds.
You wait here in the car, Edward.
Yes, Mr. Marsden. Will you be long, sir?
I don't think that's any of your business. I pay you to chauffeur me around, not to ask me questions.
Yes. I was only bringing up the fact that it's getting dark, and you said you had to be at the plaza by 9.
I'm perfectly able to take care of my own business, Edward. I'll mind mine, and you mind yours. You wait here in the car till I'm through in the park. Understand?
Yes, Mr. Marsden.
Greystone Park. We go case. Private mystery. Police fail to find clue. Read all
about it.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah?
How do you suppose that big shot lawyer Marsden disappeared? Think his chauffeur had something to do with it?
I don't know, Tom.
I don't get it. He tells his chauffeur to wait, walks into this here park, and never comes out. Chauffeur hears a scream inside the park, and that's all.
You scared too easy, Tom. Nine that night. Just broke my shovel. Well, I have to go over to the tool house and get another one.
But, Joe, The tool house is way over the other end of the park.
So what?
It's getting dark. And it ain't healthy to be in this place after dark. Let's knock off, Joe. We can finish digging these flower beds tomorrow.
If we knock off, we'll both be looking for a new gardener job tomorrow. Andrew, the superintendent, told us to finish up tonight. And that's what we got to do.
Look, Joe, don't leave me. I got an idea there's something running around this park we don't know nothing about. When I think of that lawyer Marston, I...
So, you've seen ghosts now, huh, Tom? Well, there ain't no ghost or nothing else that can scare Joe Zanetti. You wait for me here. If you see a boogeyman, well, just offer him a drink and ask him to stick around, huh?
Extra, Greystone Park claims second victim. Park gardener leaves companion for tool house and never returns. Police call in Hugo Carter at a public demand solution. Here are by
Police headquarters, Sergeant Hogan speaking. What? You saw a light floating around in Greystone Park? What kind of a light? Purple, eh? You see anything else? What? A white ghost walking down the park road, eh? All right, don't get excited. We'll send a squad car to investigate right away.
Hello, Sergeant Hogan.
Oh, hello, Mr. Carteret. Miss Smith.
Oh, I see you know my special assistant.
Of course he does, Hugo. The sergeant and I are old friends. We met at the policeman's
office. Oh. Keeping you busy these days, Sergeant?
Busy? Mr. Carteret, we sure need your help in this case. The commissioner's going nuts inside. And you ought to hear the double talk coming in over this wire. This Greystone Park business has got the people living around there walking around in circles. They're seeing everything from the King of the Pixies to the ghost of my great-grandmother.
I don't wonder. I've been working up a few shivers about it myself.
Is Commissioner Williams in, Sergeant?
Yeah. Go right into his office, Mr. Carteret. He's expecting you. Here comes another screwball report.
Come on, Ann.
Police headquarters. Sergeant Hogan speaking. What? You heard some kind of animal howling in Greystone Park? What kind of animal?
So Joe Zanetti left you to get a new shovel, eh, Farrell? And then a little later, you heard a scream.
Yes, sir. It come from far off, and it must have been Joe.
Oh, hello, Hugo. Miss Smith?
Commissioner?
Well, I guess that'll be all, Farrell. Stay pretty close to home, though. We may need you later.
Yes, sir.
Oh, that was Tom Farrell, the gardener. Hard to get anything out of him. He's so jittery. He's convinced there's some kind of murdering thing running around loose in that park. So is Mars and Schultz. And I'm convinced they're both telling straight stories.
I trust you searched the park thoroughly, Commissioner.
Oh, of course I have, Hugo. Had a detail, practically scrape every foot of the area with a fine-tooth comb.
And you found nothing, Commissioner Williams?
Nothing. Until yesterday morning.
Oh, you have a clue?
Yes, if you want to call it that, Hugo. But, well, it's almost incredible. Fantastic on the face of it. Hugo, we need your help badly. We're at our wits' ends down here, and I haven't even asked.
Well, naturally, Commissioner, I'd be delighted. There's a touch of the macabre and supernatural here that I find very interesting. Don't you, Anne?
Well, not for sure.
Now then, Commissioner, you said something about a clue.
Yes. Zanetti, the missing gardener, was wearing hobnail shoes. The road was soft in the recent rain, and we were able to trace his footsteps. As far as they went.
What do you mean, as far as they went?
I mean those footprints stopped dead in the middle of the road.
What?
Right next to Caleb Greystone's tomb in the center of the park. It was just as though some giant bird of prey picked Zanetti up and carried him off.
But, my dear Williams, that doesn't make sense.
I know it doesn't, but it happened.
Zanetti couldn't vanish like that, unless he had wings.
Maybe he does have wings now.
You know, Anne, I can't get those footprints out of my mind. They interest me.
They scare me.
In fact, I think I'll stop in at Greystone Park and have a look at them.
You mean now?
Yes.
Oh, but Hugo, it's midnight, and there's something dangerous roaming around in that park. Something deadly. Why not wait until tomorrow in the daylight?
Because the things that happen in Greystone Park, Anne, seem to happen at night. Well, here we are.
Yes. Peaceful, serene Greystone Park. The place that people just hate to leave.
You should have let me drop you at your apartment, Anne. This is no place for a girl.
Oh, no, Mr. Carteret. I'm going right with you.
Well, here's the gate. It's the only entrance or exit. Let's try it. Yeah. Neatly locked with a heavy iron chain and padlock.
The police want to keep people out, and I think it's a wonderful idea.
Either that or they want to keep something in.
The thing in this park couldn't be stopped by chains or padlocks.
Well, they're not going to stop us either. Here, Ann, I'll boost you up to the top of this stone wall and climb up myself. Come on. There you are. How's the view up there?
Oh, lovely.
Now then, Mr. Carteret, let's see what kind of a second-story man you are.
I haven't done this since I was a boy.
This wall is higher than it looks. You all right, Ann?
Just dandy.
Well, now, I'll drop down and then catch you. All right, Ann. Just let yourself go.
All right, but don't miss.
There you are.
Listen, what was that?
Only the wind.
Why, I thought I heard someone calling.
Why, Ann, you're trembling.
You're telling me. Hugo, where are we going?
Up this road until we reach the place where that missing gardener's footprints stopped.
Right next to that big square tomb in the center of the park, according to Commissioner Williams.
Mm-hmm. That's the Greystone Mausoleum. All that remains of old Caleb Greystone, the philanthropist, lies within it. And that's the statue of old Caleb himself standing on the roof of the tomb.
Oh, how nice. I hope you realize that William Marsden and Joe Donetti walked along this same road at night and baited...
What's wrong?
I felt a cold hand on my face.
That isn't a hand. It's a leaf on the end of a twig. Poor kid. You're frightened, aren't you?
Who, me? I'm scared to death. I'm so scared my hair's standing on end. Ruined my permanence. Oh, Hugo.
What is it, Anne?
That statue on the top of the mausoleum. The statue of Caleb Greystone.
Yes. Well, what about it?
It moved.
What? Now, wait a minute, Anne.
Hugo, I tell you, it moved. I saw it lift one of its arms and turn its head in the moonlight.
Now, Anne, it's just that you're on edge. What you saw was a mirage brewed out of moonlight and your own imagination. That statue's made of stone. Stone statues don't move. Come on, we leave the road and go down this hollow. Well, here we are. Here's the tomb. And here's the Nutty's footprints, just as the commissioner said. It couldn't be faint, but... Wait a minute.
What is it, Hugo?
Look up at that statue of Caleb Greystone. Up there on the mausoleum roof.
What about it?
Well, when we saw it on the other side of the hollow, it faced toward the road, didn't it?
Why, yes.
Now it's facing away from the road.
Then it did move, Hugo. It did move.
More than that, Anne. While we lost sight of it down in that hollow, it turned completely around.
The restless statue intrigued Hugo Carteret no end. Like a hound after his quarry, he scrambled to the roof of the mausoleum and made a thorough examination of both the statue and the roof in the moonlight. He reported his findings to Police Commissioner Williams, and the next morning, in the light of day, they revisited the scene.
You two up there had better be careful. That roof's slippery.
We'll be all right, Anne. Here, Commissioner, watch what happens when I grasp this statue.
Yeah, interesting, Hugo. It turns loosely on that upright bar.
Yes, and I've no doubt that old Caleb Greystone is turning down below in his tomb at this sacrilege we're committing on his image. You know what, Commissioner?
What?
This statue isn't marble through and through. It's merely a marble surface on a light aluminum base. A man could lift it right off this support and walk off with it over his shoulder.
Yes, yes, he could. Not that it proves anything. But these scratches on this polished stone roof, man, Almost looks as though they led to the door of the crypt on the other end of the roof.
It's hard to tell. I tried the door of the crypt last night. It was locked. Well, it's still locked.
Here's a massive tomb. Big enough to take care of 20 dead millionaires.
Yes, you think old Caleb Greystone would be pretty lonely down there.
Yeah, in his condition, would be lonely anywhere. Oh, you go. Where do we go from here?
Let's have a talk with the park superintendent, Commissioner. His office is over there on the left. Maybe he'll be able to throw a little light on the proceedings. As the old saying goes, you never can tell.
Well, Mr. Andrews, this is Hugo Carteret, the criminologist, and his special assistant, Miss Smith.
How do you do?
Oh, yes, I've heard of you. How do you do?
As superintendent of the Greystone Park, Mr. Andrews, we thought you might give us a little information on that tomb.
Always glad to help the police, Commissioner Williams.
Thank you. Now then, has that statue of Caleb Greystone always faced the road?
Why, yes, as far as I know.
It doesn't now, Mr. Andrews. You can see for yourself through the window.
Why, bless my soul, you're right, Mr. Cotton. Now, how do you suppose that happened?
That's what we hope to find out.
Interesting idea to build a statue of yourself and put it on your own mausoleum.
Mr. Greystone had it made in memory of himself as a reminder to the public that he had converted his private estate into a park for their benefit.
Mm-hmm. Somewhat of an egotist, huh?
And from what the newspaper files say, eccentric. They practically accused old Caleb of dealing in black magic and selling his soul to the devil.
Well, I understand the whole family was rather peculiar, Mr. Andrews.
Well, yes, I suppose it's true. There were all sorts of rumors. Old Caleb was the eldest son, and he hated the rest of his family. Cheated them out of the family fortune, they say. It's said that he drove his own brother Arthur into poverty.
Yes, yes, I remember the case. Arthur Greystone disappeared. Bureau of Missing Persons never did locate him.
Miss Andrews, that mausoleum out there is a pretty massive affair. Is old Caleb the only one buried there?
Yes. As I said, he hated the rest of the family. He specified in his will that only he was to be buried there.
That wasn't very hospitable of him.
So old Caleb has that whole place all to himself, huh?
What are you getting at, Hugo?
Yes, that's what I'd like to know, too.
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all. It's just that these cases of abnormal psychology interest me. Yes, Commissioner, they interest me no end. Come in. Oh, hello, Anne.
Hello, Hugo. Relaxing at the piano, I see.
Yes. Would you like me to stop?
No, I like that melody you're playing.
So do I. You know, music brings a certain clarity to the jumbled mind. It resolves things. It's a mental lullaby. Where's it been, Anne?
Down at police headquarters. Poor Commissioner Williams.
Why poor, Commissioner Williams?
Every newspaper in town is clamoring either for a solution to this great known park mystery or a new police commissioner.
Yes, I know. It's a pity. You know, Anne, Frank Williams is not only a gentleman, he's our friend. I think the time has come for us to try and crack this case.
The time has come, all right, but how?
Well, we've seen the outside of Caleb Greystone's tomb. It might be interesting to have a look at the inside.
The inside?
Yes. I've got an idea that's where our solution lies.
But how are you going to get in? That door of the crypt on the roof is locked tight.
Well, Anne, if I may boast a little, I have a certain skill with burglar tools.
Yes, I know, but you can't go there in broad daylight and burglarize somebody's mausoleum.
I don't propose to go there in broad daylight.
You mean we're going tonight?
I mean I'm going tonight. I'm taking you home right after dinner.
Oh, no, you don't. You need someone to hold your flashlight. And besides, I'm just mad about mausoleums. Oh, it's a lovely evening. And outside of this storm, it's just as black.
Oh, look out, Anne. The stone roof is slippery. Careful now. The door of the crypt is right over here. Your flashlight trained right on this block. But wait a minute. How did that happen?
How did what happen?
Why, the door of the crypt is unlocked.
unlocked.
Yes. Somebody's been here ahead of us.
Oh, dear. It's awfully dark down there. What are we going to do now?
We're going inside.
There may be someone in there.
But I'll find out. You wait out here.
Oh, no, Hugo Carteret. I'm not going to stand out here alone. I'm going in with you.
Have it your own way. We'll take this family. They're coming here. Careful now. There are stairs leading down into the crypt. You stay close to me.
Hugo, I'm practically hugging you to death right now. Oh, it's cold in here.
Well, it's dry at any rate.
It's dark as pitch. I can't see a thing.
Here, Ann, you take the hammer. Let me have the flashlight. Now, let's have a look.
Oh, Hugo, look. There are two men lying there on the floor.
Yes. The two men have disappeared in Greystone Park. William Marsden and Joe DeNevin.
Are they?
Yes, I'm afraid they are. Oh, poor devils. Nobody would think of looking for them in here.
How were they killed?
They've got deep red marks around their throat. Typical of some kind of strangling cord.
Oh, it's horrible. Why were they brought here? Why would anybody want to do a thing like this?
The motive, Anne, like everything else in this tragic case, was abnormal. I'm beginning to see now why.
Footsteps on the roof. Someone's up there.
Yes.
Stop by the crypt door. Hugo, do you think it's the restless statue?
Perhaps. I do know it's the killer. Is coming down the steps. Put out that flashlight and stopping yourself against the wall.
Good evening. Oh, come now. I know you're in here. I can see in the dark better than you think. I have eyes like a cat. I saw you coming through the trees. I left the crypt door open for you. You walked right in, you fool. You walked right in.
Who are you?
Why, my name is Arthur Greystone. This is the Greystone tomb. I live here with my friend.
So you killed these two men?
Yes, it was lonesome here. I wanted my brother Caleb over there in the casket to have company. He wanted to sleep alone in this big, beautiful mausoleum. It was so selfish, so selfish. But now he has two others to sleep with him.
And soon he'll have four. You took the statue of your brother off the supporting rod, didn't you, Arthur? It was light enough to carry. You hid it here in the tomb and posed as your brother's statue. In the dark, your victims couldn't see that the statue was alive. You dropped a cord around their necks as they passed below.
You're very clever, my friend. No, I wouldn't move if I were you. I have the strangling cord here in my hand, and I'm very good at using it.
What did you do, Arthur?
My brother Caleb cheated me in life. Drove me into poverty. Then he tried to sleep me even in death. He built this tomb and willed that only he would sleep here.
This is your idea of revenge, filling his tomb with sleeping companions.
Yes, I waited years to get even. Caleb wanted to be alone, but now he'll never be alone. He'll never be able to realize his dying wish. Well, this talk has been very pleasant. Yes, indeed, but now we must get to work. I'll take you first, young lady. Please don't try to resist. I assure you I'm very strong. And really, I don't want to make you suffer.
Look out, Anne. I tried to drive you with your flashlight, will you?
No.
You fool,
I can't hold it.
I can do it with my bare hands.
Oh, yeah.
I'm stronger than you,
you
here.
I'm stronger than
you. Oh, nice work, Anne. You handle a hammer like a carpenter.
Oh, Hugo, I'm afraid I killed
you. No, you just stunned him, that's all, Anne. I'll tie him up in his own cord in a moment. But first, let's have a good look at him with his flashlight. Lift that white hood of his, will you, Anne?
Hugo, it's Tom Farrell, the gardener.
And so ended the case of the lonesome corpse. And another chapter in the memoirs of Hugo Carteret.
Arthur Greystone had disappeared, only to reappear close to his brother's mausoleum as Tom Farrell, the gardener. A convenient alias. And the city of New York breathed a certain relief when this murderer, obsessed and poisoned by his macabre idea of revenge, finally went to the chair.
The Haunting Hour on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC broadcast from 1945. And so closes this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. It's been a pleasure.